ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
King Puranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife, and consequently in his next life he became a very beautiful and well situated woman. He took his next breath as the daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. Since King Puranjana thought of his wife at the time of death, he attained the body of a woman in his next breath. This verifies the following verse in the Bhagavad Gita 8.6. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tejate yante kale varam tam tame vaiti kamteya sada tad bhava bhavita. I'll pause here. This particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam deals with the allegorical story of King Puranjana. In the Srimad Bhagavatam in Canto 4, which is a discussion between Maitreya Muni and Narada, Maitreya Muni and Vidura. So this particular pastime is when Narada Muni is explaining to King Prachinuhari. Narada Muni is actually indirectly preaching to King Prachinuhari, because Narada Muni, out of his compassion, sees that this king is too much attached in karma kanda, ritualistic activities of the Vedas. So then, out of his sheer compassion, he comes and preaches to King Prachinuhari. But because he knows that the king is not in a position to take the message directly, he tries to preach to him in an indirect level. So from a preaching point of view, it is important for us to connect to people at a human level before we connect with them at a spiritual level. Once we understand people, they are ready to understand us. So Narad Muni is using that tactic of preaching to King Pratinbhari in this particular way. This allegory that he tells King Pratinbhari is in two parts. You can say it is in two parts. Part one, and the reason I am explaining this is because then when we read Prabhupada's brilliant book, or, you know, it just, the text fits in the context. So, part one of the Puranjana pastime, allegorical story, is when Narad Muni tells King Pratinbhari indirectly, portraying King Pratinbhari as Puranjana. So in part one, Puranjana is Puranjana, who is very attached to his wife, etc., etc. In part two, what happens? King Puranjana, when he dies, he takes birth as a woman. And her name is Vaidarbhi, because he is born out of the king Vaidarbha. So he becomes Vaidarbhi. So Puranjana, who was a man, dies, takes birth as Vaidarbhi. Now this particular text that we are reading today, I'll read the translation again, and then you see that this particular verse is actually the turning point in the two-part story. The Puranjana pastime, in one sense, part A is over, and part B is about to start now. In terms of when he becomes a woman, then what is his lifestyle? So if I read the translation again, King Puranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife. And consequently, in his next life, he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next bed as the daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. So you get this one, right? So here Sri Prabhupada is saying, in the Prabhupada, which I'll probably just run through again. In the first part of the Prabhupada, Sri Prabhupada explains to us that what happens at the time of death. As I said, that this particular juncture is about King Puranjana dying and then taking birth as Vaidarbhi. So here Prabhupada firstly, in one third of his book, will explain to us what happens at the time of death. And those of us who know this. If you are regular to the temple, we understand the science of the reincarnation of the soul. So here Prabhupada says that whatever we remember at the time of death, what state of being we are at the time of death, that state of being we will attain in our next life without fail. Krishna tells us that in Bhagavad Gita, which is the verse that we have just read, no? In Bhagavad Gita 8.6. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam dhyanate ante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kamteya sadatad bhava bhavita. Prabhupada translates. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. So now we apply this to King Puranjana. He was very attached to his wife. And he was also not entirely a demoniac of a demoniac disposition. He had done a lot of pious activities in his life. Not necessarily devotional activities, but some pious activities in his life. But he was attached to his possessions, in his positions. So because of his attachment, that is what he remembered at the time of death. And therefore, in his next life, he became a woman. When a living entity is accustomed to think of a particular subject matter or become absorbed in a certain type of thought, he will think of that subject at the time of death. At the time of death, one will think of the subject that has occupied his life while he was awake, lightly sleeping or dreaming, or while he was deeply sleeping. After falling from the association of the Supreme Lord, the living entity thus transmigrates from one body formed to another according to the nature's force, until finally attains the human form. If he is absorbed in the material thoughts and ignorant of spiritual life, and if he does not take shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda, who solves all questions of birth and death, he will become a woman in his next life, especially if he thinks of his wife. So far, Sri Prabhupada has explained what happens at the time of death, which is the law of transmigration. From here on, Sri Prabhupada explains how it happens. Let's hear. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 331.1, Karmana Devi Netrena, a living entity acts piously and impiously, and sometimes in both ways. A living entity acts piously as well as impiously, and sometimes both ways. Again, all actions are taken into account and the living entity is offered a new body by his superiors. So the process of reincarnation of going from one body to the other is not by chance. It is based on our experience from Bhagavatam, that it is karmana devi netrena. It is based on our karma, our good and our bad activity. And not just only that, it is based on devi netrena. Now, devi means celestial beings, the demigods, and netrena means their supervision. Now, netra is like supervision. So according to our karma, which is made up of good and bad activities, under the supervision of the demigods, the soul takes another body, as we are seeing in the case of Puranjana. Although King Puranjana was openly attached to his wife, he nonetheless performed many pious votive activities. Consequently, although he took the form of a woman, he was given a chance to be the daughter of a powerful king. Then Shrupad will explain in the last part of his work, which will say, after explaining what happens at the time of death, and then explaining how it happens at the time of the death, now he will explain where it happens. Now he is not going to explain to us every aspect of where it happens, but he is explaining in the context of King Puranjana. So let's see where it happens for him. As contained in Bhagavad Gita 6.41, Prapya Punyati Tam Lokan Ushitva Shaswati Samaha Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Vristo Vijayate. The successful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. This particular verse that Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita is in the context where Lord Krishna is explaining to Arjuna about the two paths, the path of the materialistic people who are grossly enjoying their senses, and the path of a yogi who is trying to cultivate his Krishna consciousness. So Arjuna asks a brilliant question at that juncture to Krishna. You say, my Lord, you have said that those people who are materially enjoying are in one bucket, and those who are progressing towards their Krishna consciousness are aiming for a higher journey or higher destination. But what about those who are neither here nor there? Somebody has taken the path of Krishna consciousness but has not attained the perfection. So isn't he like the ribbon cloud, which is never on earth nor in the sky, it's just floating. So isn't his position like that? And then in that juncture, Krishna quotes this verse, actually, two verses, not quotes, Krishna states this in two verses, 6.41, which Prabhupada quotes here, and in 6.42 as well. So in 6.1, 6.41, what does Krishna say? Let's read that part again, that Prabhupada writes here in his program. The unsuccessful yogi, keep that in mind, because this is not the successful yogi, he is the unsuccessful yogi. Unsuccessful in the sense that he was on his journey to Krishna consciousness but could not complete it in that particular life. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. So when we take up to the devotional service and if we are not successful, Krishna is saying that our destination can be twofold. If we have practiced for a short time, which is this 6.41, then we can be born in the family of Suchinam or Srimatam. Suchi means clean. Regularly use this word. In the family of pious people. And Shri means opulence, wealth, or in the family of very wealthy people. Why in these two particular types of family, in a very pious family or a family of rich people? Because that is conducive to continue our Krishna consciousness from that point forward. So Krishna gives us the facility whereby now, with all these, we can continue on our devotional service. And you can see this in many kids that come to the temple. They are possibly this soul who could not complete their Krishna consciousness. And you see these kids just taking up Krishna consciousness from day one, coming to the temple, coming to Mangalarti, reciting verses. So these are possibly these examples. Yeah. Krishna also says that in 6.42, which Prabhupada doesn't quote here, that those yogis who are unsuccessful after a long practice. So if they practice for the short time, their destination can be, after enjoying the heavenly planets for their pious activities, they are born in a Suchina or Srimatam family. Pious people or in a rich family. But those yogis who have been unsuccessful after a long practice, but still unsuccessful, they are born in the family of Dhimata. Dhi means, word Dhi comes from the word Buddhi. So in a family of intelligent people, and Prabhupada translates their intelligence as transcendentalist. In a family of transcendentalist, and Prabhupada brilliantly, lovingly talks his own example in Bhagavad Gita 6.42 that through the arrangement of the transcendence, I met my spiritual master. A nice Prabhupada to read. So after long practice, he is born in the family of transcendentalist. If a person falls from the path of bhakti yoga, goal realization due to attachment to fruitive activity, philosophical speculation or mystic yoga, he is given a chance to take birth in a high and rich family. The higher authorities appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead thus render justice to the living entity according to the living entity's desires. Although King Puranjana was overly absorbed in thoughts of his wife and thus became a woman, he took birth in a family of a king due to his previous pious activities. The conclusion is that all our activities are taken into consideration before we are awarded another body. Narada Muni therefore advised Vyasadeva that one should take to Krishna consciousness, devotional service, and abandon all ordinary occupational duties. This advice was given by Lord Krishna himself. Although a devotee may fall from the path of spiritual consciousness, he will nonetheless attain a human body in the home of a devotee or a rich man. In this way, one can resume his devotional service. Om Gyanati Randasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Vinitam Yena Tasnaya Shri Gurve Nama Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Prashtarine Nirvisesha Sunyavari Paschatya Desamatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasati Gaurakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, as much as it is always a pleasure, to speak on anything that is connected with Krishna Katha, whether it is preaching a Bhakti Viksha or giving Shrimad Bhagavatam, it is always challenging to talk about Krishna in Bhagavatam classes, especially when senior devotees sit in front of you and are hearing. It becomes a daunting task. But as a seva to the Lord, we have to preach. One advantage in preaching, when senior devotees like Bhakta Prabhu and Bhakti Mataji and all of your present is also, you can get on the job correction. If I make a mistake, I'll be corrected on this one. So that's also a pleasure. Everything I say is recorded for quality and control and quality and training purposes. Yes, as I say on your telephone. So Prabhu, please guide me, bless me, so whatever I can speak is enlightening to all of us, and that includes me as well. So, King Puranjana pastime, in this particular episode, we can see that he is attached to his dear wife and therefore he takes birth as a woman. So for us, as an application, as a takeaway, is that everything that we do in our life, all our actions, all our thoughts, all our deeds are very, very important, and they are noted down in the accounts by the celestial beings. And at the time of the death, it is all taken into consideration, and then a particular type of body is awarded to us, depending on our karma, depending on our desires, depending on the supervision of the Devi gods. Karmana Devi, Netrena, Prabhupada calls them. So, it is therefore very important for us to be very thoughtful in what we do, in what we say. We are, when a bird is sitting on a branch, If the branch was to break, the bird doesn't care. Why? Because the bird can fly away from the branch at any moment. The branch is a shelter for the bird, no doubt. But the biggest shelter for the bird is not the branch. The biggest shelter for the bird is the bird's wings. The bird is dependent on the wing to fly away from the branch if the branch was to snap. Similarly, we human beings, as devotees at the moment, are also sitting on the branch, on a particular branch, that is gradually breaking, and one day the branch will break. Now, if our spiritual wings are not developed, by the time the branch breaks, which is called death, then just as the bird which is sitting on the branch, if the bird is a baby bird and the branch breaks, what happens? The baby bird will fall down. Because the wings are not there to let her or him fly. So when the wings are undeveloped, it is a disaster for the baby bird. But if the wings are developed for an adult bird, then it's not a problem. Similarly, as devotees, as sadhakas, if we have not developed our spiritual wings, which is a challenge at times, worse than that is the situation when we are not even aware that we have got spiritual wings. There are many people who are not even aware that they have got spiritual wings with which they can fly. So, if we are not aware we have spiritual wings, or if we are aware we have spiritual wings, but we have not fully developed it, then we are in trouble. We will fall down when the branch breaks. So, Krishna consciousness is the journey of flying to this visual world, with our Krishna consciousness disposition, that awareness, that consciousness. The highest consciousness is Krishna consciousness, thinking of Krishna when the branch breaks. So, it becomes important for us to think of Krishna every time. Life is a practice, life is a test of taste. Throughout the life we get different tastes from thrown at us. But the one who has developed the higher taste passes the final examination at the time of death. And that higher taste is Krishna consciousness. Param Vishwanivartate. So it becomes important for us. Otherwise, Narada Muni is telling King Puranjana that if we are not at that platform of highest consciousness or Krishna consciousness, then his journey will be another life, another birth, and in this case he is seeing as a woman, to continue his journey. Then Srila Prabhupada again, out of always his compassion, makes the point that don't worry if you have not, it's of course best to fully develop our wings, our Krishna consciousness. But if we have not, then there is still a cushion to fall on. So at least do as much as we can. Of course, we should aim for the highest, but do as much as we can. Because if for some reason or the other we are not fully successful, then neha vikramana swasti pratavayana vidyate. Then at least we will continue our Krishna consciousness from that point forward in our next life. And our destination can be either in a Suchinam, in a pious family, in a Srimatam, in a rich family, or in a Dhimatam, in a transcendentalist family where we can continue our Krishna consciousness. So, if we cannot, remembering Krishna at the time of death is extremely important. It is the test to go back to Godhead, that we have to remember Krishna at the time of death. So then, if we are not able to remember Krishna throughout our life, if Krishna is not the only thing that we are thinking through our life, then thinking of Krishna at the time of death may be difficult. Because what we think throughout our life is most likely what we will think at the time of death. Our problem is diametrically opposite to the problems that the gopis have. The problem is the gopis' problem. The problems that they had is that they could not forget Krishna. And our problem is we cannot remember Krishna. And that's why we are sadhakas. So, In order to be in a position to think of Krishna at the time of death, if at the moment we cannot think of Krishna all the time, this mic is, as Chaitanya Charitamrita says, this mic is very humble.
Put it down. Put the balance down.
It keeps falling. Which time is done?
He knows.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So, if we cannot think, so if you cannot think of Krishna, if you cannot think only of Krishna through our, you know, at this dimension, then it becomes, at least we should endeavor that Krishna is our predominant thought. So if you think, now if there is a cycle of Krishna consciousness, and that's what we only should think, and outside is the cycle of things that is not Krishna consciousness, which also, you know, time to time may come in our thoughts, that outside cycle should reduce and the Krishna consciousness cycle should grow, so that we can bring more and more thoughts, our thoughts more and more into the cycle of Krishna consciousness. So if you cannot think of, if you cannot only think of Krishna, Krishna should be the thing that, Krishna should be the person that we think the most, at least. And then try to increase it, you know, day by day, that we become more and more Krishna conscious. And consciousness literally means, you know, to think of Krishna, to be aware of Krishna. So here, due to the influence of Chandabhava, the influence of time, we see that the transmigration of Puranjana to Vaidarbhi. I'll keep the Puranjana pastime short to that extent, because we've been hearing from this for a long time. And today, is the auspicious occasion of Shivaratri, which is also on our ISKCON calendar, marked yesterday. It was celebrated in some parts of the world yesterday, but I don't think it's that important in terms of whether it was yesterday or today. What is important is, you know, it's Shivaratri, and he's the Vaishnavana Vyathasana, he's the topmost devotee. So I will spend some time speaking about the Shiva Tattva to my ability. Lord Shiva is a very unique personality in the sense that he has got his own tattva. There is Vishnu tattva and then there is Jiva tattva. The Vishnu tattvas, we are the Jiva tattvas, and Vishnu tattvas are the incarnations and extensions of the Lord. Lord Shiva is such a special personality that he has got his own tattva, which is the Shakti tattva, the Shiva tattva. Lord Shiva exist at different realms of reality. Coming from a, before my Krishna consciousness, coming from a Hindu background, this topic of Lord Shiva was very confusing, because the clarity was missing in terms of where does he fit into the, if I can call it, the structure of the way that Krishna has created this visual and the material world. So Lord Shiva, you know, in his first existence, says that exists at there is a spiritual world, which is the Vaikuntha planets, and then there is this material world. In between is the border, and that border is Mahesh Dham, where Lord Shiva exists as Sadashiva. Prabhupada explains, and we read that in Brahma Samhita as well, especially. And we are quite familiar with this energy that Srila Prabhupada gives us, that Lord Shiva is like that curd or like that yogurt that has been transformed from the milk. In one sense, there is no difference between milk and curd, because it's sending. It's just because the milk has come in contact with some acid, it has become yogurt or become curd. But yogurt is nothing but milk. So Srila Prabhupada explains that in one sense, Lord Shiva is supreme because he is Vishnu. But in another sense, he is not, because he has transformed, Krishna has transformed himself as Sadashiva for particular function that he has to perform. Now, the Lord explains in many forms, and therefore one of that form becomes Sadashiva. This Sadashiva planet, which is the Mahesh Dham, or also known as Kailash, exists eternally at the border of the spiritual and the material world. It exists eternally. And therefore, Sadashiva is also an eternal personality. He always exists. At the time of dissolution, now when the material world is annihilated, Lord Shiva is not, the Sadashiva is not annihilated. He is always there, eternally present. What is his function there? Lord Shiva also expands into different personalities, and his first expansion, which becomes his second level of existence, is Mahesh. The Sadashiva, which is transcendental, eternally existing at the border of the spiritual and material world, never comes in contact with the material nature. It never comes into contact with the material nature. It's always situated in that spiritual world. But because Lord Shiva also has to operate within the material world to facilitate Krishna Lila, pastimes of Krishna, he expands as Mahesh. That Mahesh expansion of Lord Shiva is the one that comes, is the first personality that comes in contact with the material nature. That's Mahesh nature. And at the third, Sadashiva, there is Mahesh. And then at the third level of existence is that Lord Shiva, which is more famously known as Rudra. So at the time of creation, Lord Brahma is the first living entity that enters the material world. And from his, so after Lord Brahma tries to progenate the material world, when he creates the four Kumaras, he requests the four Kumaras to increase the progeny. But the four Kumaras were always already aware of the challenges of a Grihastha life. So therefore they refused to marry. Now Lord Brahma became angry at the four Kumaras, and out of his anger, from the forehead of Lord Brahma came Rudra. That's the third level of existence of Lord Shiva. So, it's important to understand the position of a person before we understand his actions. So if you understand Lord Shiva's position, he's the topmost devotee. So in that particular feature, the Sadashiva feature, we said that Vaishnava Nam Yatha Shambhu. That Sadashiva is also known as Shambhu. Vaishnava Nam Yatha Shambhu. Why? Because Krishna utilizes Lord Shiva to preach to the most fallen. There's preaching going on at every point in time. But Lord Shiva is especially endowed to preach to the most fallen. Just in Kali Yuga, Lord Srila Prabhupada came to preach to the most fallen. Shri Guru, Karuna Sindhu, Adhama Janara Bandhu. So Srila Prabhupada, Shri Guru, Karuna Sindhu, is an ocean of mercy. Adhama means the most fallen. Janara Bandhu, Bandhu means friend. So Srila Prabhupada is the friend of the most fallen. So Lord Shiva has got this particular function, the role to play for eternity, to preach to the most fallen. So, because he is always preaching to the most fallen, and once he attracts this most fallen jivas, at least to him, those who are purely in mode of ignorance, once he has attracted those personalities to him, and if they are purely devoted to Lord Shiva, these jivas are ascended to the planet of Kailash, at the border of the spiritual and material world, and together with Sadashiva and Parvati, Mother Parvati, they eternally glorify Lord Krishna, because Sadashiva is always worshipping Lord Krishna, Ram Maniti, Ramiti, Rame, Rame, Manorami. He is always chanting the glories of Lord Ram and Krishna. So if anybody goes to his planet, it is natural that the worship of Lord Ram or Lord Krishna will be going on. Just as if somebody comes into the house of a devotee, it's natural that the worship at the house will not be of the devotee, but the worship at that house will be of Krishna. It's natural if you have visitors coming to our house. So similarly, if any foreign soul who has become attracted to Lord Shiva purely, he is ascended to the platform of Kailash, and there Lord Shiva becomes the spiritual master, and further enhances their Krishna consciousness, so that from that Mahesh Nam, they can go to Vaikuntha, eternally doing this service. So Vaishnava Nam Yatha Sambhu, Lord Shiva becomes a eternal spiritual master to the most fallen. Now, many a times, you know, we have read that Lord Shiva is the supreme. Many a times we are also challenged that Lord Shiva is the supreme. And especially if you come from Hindu backgrounds, you know, it's a big challenge to a lot of people to enter Krishna temple, because for them everything is supreme. You know, Ganesh is supreme, Hanuman is supreme, Lord Shiva is supreme, Lama is supreme, and then say all is one as well. Then the nice thing is they are attracted to some holy. And that's the whole, if you think of it, that's the whole model of Vyasadev, that the Vedic literature being so vast is always attracting somebody at some level. Krishna loves us from where, from Krishna loves us for who we are and from where we are. Just as when we rebel to Krishna, we become determined not to love him. Krishna, seeing the rebellious soul, gets determined to love us. So he always accompanies us as a super soul, no way away, no matter where we are. And we see that in the case of King Puranjana as well, that the Vidyat Sakha always accompanies Puranjana. When he was Puranjana and also when she was Vaidarbhi, always accompanies. And eventually Vaidarbhi talks to the Vidyat Sakha, which is the super soul, which becomes a spiritual master of Vaidarbhi, and then guides her, you know, to perfection. So similarly, Krishna is always accompanying us. So Vedic literature, if you look at it, this is another question that keeps coming. Why is it so confusing? You know, in some literature we find this, in some scriptures we find this, somewhere it says this is supreme, very supreme. And then Vyasadeva, when he is writing, when he is writing on the Vedas, and after that even the Puranas, then there seems to be sometimes contradictions in terms of what is important, what is the path to progress, etc., etc. So when we reach about Prabhupada's purpose, you know, it becomes clear to us that the Vedic literature have got, and this is very important, the Vedic literature have got purpose and progression. The Vedic literature have got a particular purpose, particular texts have got particular purpose, and there is a particular progression. So because if bhakti seems too daunting for somebody, now you see Lord Shiva's role, he goes and preaches to those who are adhama, who are most fallen, but then he has to preach to them at that level. So therefore our Puranas are in three different. There are six Puranas in the mode of goodness, six Puranas that deal with people consciousness in the mode of passion, and then the last six in the mode of ignorance. Now the Puranas are not into ignorance, passion or goodness. The Puranas are transcendental, but it deals and attracts those souls who are in different level of consciousness. So Lord Shiva, the last six Puranas, and especially the Shiva Purana and the Linga Purana, will glorify Lord Shiva as the supreme. Why? It's natural. Because if somebody with a lower consciousness still wants to be attracted to spirituality, and they see some fascination in Lord Shiva that they get attracted to, if they are told that somebody else is by the way supreme personality of God and not Lord Shiva, then the preaching stops there. As I said before, we have to connect to people at a human level. So Lord Shiva connects to them at that level, and therefore he dresses accordingly as well. He wears skulls and serpents and ashes all over his body to preach at that, to appropriately to that particular audience. So Prabhupada said, first you dress and then you wear dress. So he dresses accordingly to address those kind of audience. So those Puranas will naturally glorify Lord Shiva as the supreme. Now, in the other six Puranas which deals with people with the consciousness of passion, then Lord Brahma is glorified as the supreme. And in the Vishnu Purana, you know, in the Puranas that are in the chapter of goodness, will glorify Vishnu as the supreme personality of Godhead. The reason being they are not contradictory, the reason being that there is a gradual elevation and progression for every living entity. Now, so how do we reconcile all this? The same author, Vyasadeva, who is writing the Vedas and writing the Puranas, after being despondent, you know, about his writing, seeks guidance from Narad Muni and then writes Srimad Bhagavatam. Now in the Bhagavatam, it is very categorical and very, very explicitly broadcasted that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the pastimes, all the philosophy is directing to one conclusion, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, all the literatures, the rites spoken, that have been, that we have discussed so far, are by the same author. So, who is best placed to conclude? The author, which has assumingly given contradictory views, or is, and conclusively given us one view at the end, or our opinion, or taking some text out of context. So it becomes very important to read the text in the context they are set up. Yeah. So like this. So the misconception that who is supreme is in one sense, you know, justified because the literatures are designed like that, but one has to understand it in totality from an acharya, like Shri Gopal, to understand how it all fits in, how the particular diksha puzzles fit in. Yeah. Now, some people still don't get convinced in terms of, you know, how the hierarchy works. So if we put this explanation forward, question gets asked to say, if Lord Shiva is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then why did Lord Ram worship Lord Shiva? Those of us who are familiar with Ramayana, that at the juncture of Lord Ram sitting at Rameshwaran, which is at the shores of India, and waiting to cross the ocean so that he can go to Lanka to find Mother Sita. At that point in time, because his body is monkey yami, crossing the ocean is a challenge. So he sits down, and actually before he even worships Lord Shiva, if I get the chronological order correct, he worships the ocean god, Samudra Deva, asking for passageway so that the army can go. Now, the Samudra Deva doesn't reciprocate, and Lord Ram becomes very furious to the point that he takes almost on the verge of making a decision to dry up the ocean so that they can continue. At that point, when Samudra Deva, when the ocean, the god of ocean appears and tells Ram other means to cross the ocean, which is literally, he said that you've got in your army two personalities, you have got the power to float, who have been bestowed with the duty to float the rock on the ocean in your service. So the point that I'm making here is that the two points are made. One is that the Krishna is, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that Maya Dakshina Prakriti, this Prakriti, this material nature is working under my supervision. So when something works under our supervision, we can use it the way we want to use it. Because we have created it, we can change it the way we like to change it. So here Lord Ram demonstrates that the stone, which is supposed to sink in the water, can also float in the water, because the person who has created the law of gravity can also change the law of gravity. Lord Ram has created the law of gravity, he can also change it. So just as the stone by default is supposed to sink in the water, he can also make it float. That's Lord Ram, that's why he is his goal. So when the stone bridge is being built, at that point Lord Ram is worshipping Shiva. So people take this particular episode and then ask to say, given that Lord Ram is Supreme Personality of Godhead, then why is he worshipping Lord Shiva? And the answer to that question is because the opening question, just as in the opening question in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Dharma Kshetri Kuru Kshetri Shama Veta Yuvitsava, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of tribunals desiring to fight, what did they do? Oh, Sanjaya. That's what Dhritarashtra is asking Sanjaya. What did they do? That's the opening question. In other words, what he's saying that my and yours, from Bali explains, no, two different parties are there. So similarly, the opening question in the Valmiki Ramayana is there an idealistic human being? Is there a human being that exhibits all the qualities of how a human being should live? And thereon, Valmiki starts narrating the pastimes of Ramkatha, of Ramlila. So, if you see the mood of the author in the question being posed, then his writing is similarly to that particular point. To say, yes, there is an idealistic human being. to give us an example of how we should live our life. Therefore, Lord Ram throughout the Ramayana acts as an idealistic human being. Although time to time it does demonstrate his superhuman and divine powers, no doubt. It does demonstrate his superhuman and divine powers, but at no point in time, at all throughout Valmiki Ramayana, he will claim that he is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because if he does, then the whole purpose, not the whole purpose, in one sense, the main purpose of Ramayana is defeated. Because the Ramayana is there to show us how to be a human being. But if we know that Lord Ram is doing that, then it's like, but he was Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could do it, but for us it's challenging. That's what we will say. No? So therefore, he is always depicted as an idealistic human being. So therefore, again, it is not that Lord Ram worships Lord Shiva only. Lord Ram worships many demigods. For example, I just said that he also worshipped the demigod of ocean. You say, no, can you give me the passage to Lanka? So he's worshipping. Lord Ram is not only worshipping, but he's also bowing down to the sages. And he's also performing that dance. Now, who is Lord Ram? He is Bhakta Ram Yajna Tapasam. Of all the yajnas, he is the benefactor. But he is performing yajnas. Why? Because in Treta Yuga, yajna was the means to achieve liberation. So therefore, he is depicting how a person should live. So the purpose of worshipping Lord Shiva by Lord Ram is not to show that Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Ram is his devotee. No, it is to show that this is how an idealistic human being who is based on karma karma section of the Vedas or on Nishkam karma, you know, this is how you act. Now similarly, we see in our Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is the charioteer of Arjuna. Now that does not mean by analogy that Arjuna is Supreme Personality of Godhead and Krishna is the devotee. Just because he is the charioteer does not change their position. The Lord is only doing this because Ram is also devoted to Lord Shiva in the sense of Bhakta Vatsala. Just as Krishna is, in one sense, devoted to Arjuna in a friendship of Bhakta Vatsala. He is ready to do anything for his devotees. Now we also find that when Sudama went to meet Krishna after, you know, after their school days, what does Krishna do?
Worships.
He worships Sudama. Literally worship him. That doesn't arti to Sudama. Again, Daman doesn't mean that Sudama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then Krishna becomes his disciple. No? Or a devotee. It's not like that. So yes, particular pastimes are there to enhance the leader of the Lord. But we always have to understand the position of a person before we understand his action. Now this one, I'll touch on this briefly because it's totally out of my depth. But I get asked, you know, why did we worship so many personalities in our ISKCON temple? We worship Prabhupada, we worship the Acharyas, and we observe their appearance and disappearance there. And of course, you know, we worship Lord Krishna, Lord Ram, their appearance and disappearance there, etc., etc. But then why is the worship, and given that Lord Shiva is Vaishnava Nam Yathasambhu, who is the topmost devotee, and given that Lord Shiva is not only a topmost devotee, he is also one of the Mahajanas, Sambhu, Narada, Sambhu, this is the Sadashiva, he is one of the great Mahajans. Srimad Bhagavatam lists 12 Mahajans, 12 Mahajans. That does not mean, in my understanding, there is only 12 Mahajans, there are more than that. But certainly Srila Prabhupada was a Mahajan, but Bhagavatam lists the prominent Mahajans at that point in time, which were called Vinamas. So, Lord Shiva is noted there as one of the Mahajans, the one who has understood the purport of the Vedic literature, and therefore he is able to disseminate it to the general populace. So then, given his extreme elevated position of the topmost devotee of the Lord, being one of the Mahajans, very dear to Krishna, at any rate saving the Lord in the role of lifting the most fallen souls out of the material world, why do we not observe the important ways that connects with Lord Shiva? So I did some research on this. In my understanding is that Srila Prabhupada's mood, according to the previous acharyas, and in accordance with the Vedic scriptures that are applicable to Kali Yuga at this point in time, is to establish Lord Krishna very clearly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the time of establishing his throne, as I have already said as well, or mentioned as well, that there was a big misconception, and which continues to be there as well, in terms of who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially among those who come from Hindu background in India. There's a big misconception. So, in order not to increase the misconception, Srila Prabhupada established the Vishnu Tattvas as the Supreme Personality of Godhead with the focus on Krishna. So there is no doubt, there is no confusion into who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The other personalities that is worshipped in ISKCON, such as Srila Prabhupada, all the gurus, all the acharyas, there was no misconception in terms of whether they are Supreme Personality of Godhead or not. Srila Prabhupada, of course, as we know, was very clear that he is the seventh of Godhead. He is not Godhead, he is the seventh of Godhead. And similarly, all the previous acharyas, now we very clearly understand, without a tinge of doubt, that none of them are Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are very, very extraordinary, elevated, reverential, spiritual masters and acharyas in our sampradaya. So, it's a very requirement to worship the spiritual master. So, we cannot take the worship of the spiritual master away from the sampradaya. So, in that context, when the worship of the acharyas, the spiritual masters goes on, it does not lead to any extra confusion. But if the worship of Lord Shiva was to continue, then there could continue to be misconception in terms of why is Shiva not on the altar, why is Shiva not outside the altar, why is his statue in the courtyard, something like that. So just to remove or to increase or to facilitate the misconception to continue, Srila Prabhupada took that stand. Now, having said that, as I said, that Lord Shiva exists at different realms of existence. Shada Shiva is Mahesh, Shambhu is Rudra, and then the Rudra expands into another 11 Rudras at that level. In our Samudaya, Lord Shiva expands as Advaita Acharya. Advaita. Dvaita means two, and Advaita means that which is called known to. So Advaita Acharya is actually a combined incarnation of Vishnu and Shiva. Hari is Lord Vishnu and Hara is Lord Shiva. So a combined incarnation of both personalities. So we worship Lord Shiva genuinely every day as Sri Advaita Acharya. So our Panchatattva mantra is called Advaita Acharya. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Acharya, Shiva Shri Vata. So Advaita Acharya is always worshipped none other than Lord Shiva himself. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he visited the temples in South India, he also visited Shiva temple and he danced in front of Lord Shiva. The temple in Bhubaneswar itself means Lord Shiva. So he danced there, and he took prasadam there as well. So this is the main thing that devotees understand, but we struggle otherwise. That we don't have any problems in worshipping Lord Shiva or even worshipping the demigods or even worshipping senior devotees. That's not the problem. The problem is the mood in which we have to worship. It's not the worship, it is the mood. The mood of worshipping a demigod, if it's right, there is no problems. If the mood in worshipping Lord Shiva, if a devotee comes into his throne, and he comes from a Shivite family background, there is no reason for us or even for him to tell him to stop the worship of Lord Shiva. That is not how we preach. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But the mood has to be that, oh my Lord Shiva, I'm so devoted to you because I have chanted your glories for my lifetime. And now my knowledge is expanding through the torchlight of knowledge in the Vedic literature. I sincerely pray that you guide me and broaden my understanding in terms of who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is and also what is my duty in all this. If our prayer is like that, we say, oh my Lord Shiva, oh my Lord Krishna, please guide me. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? more. And more importantly, what is my connection? What is my duty in all this? Then our prayer is glorified. Then our prayer is genuine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if we worship somebody thinking that he is the big God, but he is the supreme personality of God, and make an error, then there is not, no? There is something that is not suggested in our sampradaya. No? Our second, the second offense to getting of the holy name is
To consider the names of Lord
Shiva and Lord Brahma to be equal to the independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. So there is an offense to the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. We do not see Lord Shiva as equal or or the same as Lord Krishna. So that's an offense. But having said that, our scriptures also tell us in Chaitanya Charitamrita that it is an offense to see Lord Shiva different from Krishna. Why? Again, we have to understand the particular text. When we are chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, our focus is purely on Krishna. And we are know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So our chanting is on Krishna. One pointedness on Krishna. So then, at that point, it is important to remember that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead with whom we are trying to revive our love. And others are dependent on Krishna. But in another context, just as we, respect even an ant, then what we speak of a personality who is Lord Shiva? Then in that sense, because he is so elevated, and that's not what writes in Brahma Samhita, explains in Brahma Samhita, that Sadashiva is the milk which has become the curd. So in that sense, there is no difference between milk and curd. So similarly, in one sense, there is no difference between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna, in that particular sense, because he is so close to being transcendental. He is transcendental. He is God, but not God at the same time. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to us the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Veda Tattva. And of course, that generally relates to the fact that we are also God in our nature, but not in our quantity. So similarly, Lord Shiva, Achintya Bheda Veda Tattva means that there is a Bheda between Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva, but there is a Bheda as well. They are also the same milk and yogurt. So we have to be careful. So the point I was making is that worshipping Lord Shiva is not a problem. Worshipping him with the wrong mentality will be an effort that can take a longer time to get to Krishna. But if you worship him with the right mentality, then our journey in Krishna consciousness can be quicker. So, Vedic literature is vast. It attracts people at different levels of consciousness. Whether it is the Puranas, which are generally speaking with people in the mode of ignorance, and which Lord Shiva is being endowed with preaching to them, or whether they are people in the mode of passion and ignorance, it's all attractive. So, for us who are in Krishna consciousness, in the Brahma Mandriya Gaudiya Sampradaya, we have to be careful, just as Narad Muni is very, very carefully and tactfully preaching to Puranjana. The purpose of preaching to Puranjana is not to go on a crusade, to demoralize Puranjana from the path of bhakti. It is solely to elevate him to Krishna consciousness, because Narada Muni is seeing that his sons, Prachetas, who are performing austerity under the water, are always already moving towards Krishna consciousness. So might as well, save the father as well. So that's the mood that he is preaching to Puranjana. When we are preaching to somebody, it is very important to connect to them at their level. So if somebody is coming from a background when they are heavily in their young days worshipping Lord Shiva or going to Shiva temple, it will be quite silly of us to tell them, that is nonsense. That's not how we preach. We give them our position, but somehow or the other, Prabhupada always said, we aid rather than we remove at our young days of Krishna. So whatever you are doing, continue to do that. But please add Hare Krishna Mahamantra to it. Please chant, please come to the temple, please read Bhagavad Gita. So Param Drishtvani Vardate. As our taste of Krishna consciousness increases, then the Lord sitting in the heart as the Paramatma will of course guide any devotee to say what is the right path, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is our duty. So we preach to people to aid Krishna in their life, not to remove whatever else might be in their life. Because our focus always is on progressing or developing a higher taste, and the lower taste, whatever it be, will automatically go away without any extraneous endeavor. We are there to develop our wings of Krishna consciousness, not to break somebody else's wing that has already been generated within them. And for that matter, we also don't break our wings as well. As sadhakas, we understand that we need to develop the wings, but sometimes we just pluck the feathers away, and then we momentarily come down on those challenges we face in our life. So that is why, again, coming back to the Ramayana, when Lord Ram, when Mother Sita wanted that golden deer and tells Lord Ram to go and get the deer for her, Lakshman is left to take care of Mother Sita, pastime, Mandila. So in that, when Mother Sita tells Lakshman to go and assist Lord Ram because she thinks there is a danger, so Lakshman, what does he do? He draws the Lakshman Rekha, a very famous pastime in the Ramayana. So he draws the Lakshman Rekha on the four sides of the ashram. Now this Lakshman Rekha is nothing but this Lakshman Rekha in one sense is the regulative principles that the Avacharyas have given us. So Lakshman, in that particular pastime, explained the role of a spiritual master of Mother Sita to say, if you want to be protected, if you want to be safe, stay within the four regulative principles. Not that Mother Sita will, it's a metaphorical story, it's a metaphorical point that I'm making, because Mother Sita is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so of course she won't be breaking the principles. But it's like for us to learn a lesson, Avacharyas tell us that if you stay within the Lakshman Rekha, you are safe. If you are out of the Lakshman Rekha, then the mind in the form of Ravana will snatch you and take you to places where you don't want to go. They might become visible. So we develop our wings of Krishna consciousness that will let us fly to the spiritual world by staying within the Lakshman Rekha of the four regulative principles. And then life becomes more and more Krishna consciousness day by day. I will stop here because it's almost 9 o'clock. I'm happy to take questions or comments or corrections from either the first part that I spoke on King Purandana or some of the parts that I spoke about Lord Shiva.
I'm interested in the first part of your class, some of the references that you used to establish the three positions of Lord Shiva.
So Mataji's question is, some of the references that I can go to establish the three realms of existence of Lord Shiva. In the Brahma Samhita, when this example of the milk and the cane is given, so there is a particular verse there, I don't know the number, nor do I know the verse of it, but I can go there after the class. In the Brahma Samhita, there is a verse where it is explained who Lord Shiva is, who Shambhu is, and who the other best members are. So there, it is mentioned that Lord Shiva, and Prabhupada writes the exact words, that Lord Shiva, in one sense, and that's why I was careful in quoting the exact verbatim of what is written in the Prabhupada, not by Prabhupada, but by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to say that Lord Shiva, just as the milk in one sense is not, just as the curd in one sense is not different from milk, Lord Shiva in one sense is not different from Lord Vishnu. These are the exact words from those particular Prabhupada. So I'll repeat that after the class. In terms of the existence of Rudra that comes from the forehead of Lord Brahma, that is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now again, I don't know the verses of it, but I can teach you because I did my research. Anybody knows any verses of it?
Do you mind if I just continue just for a second?
Yeah.
The establishment of Mahesh. Remember where that came from?
Yeah, so that I found in an article written by Chaitanya Charitamrita in Back to Godhead magazine, where he explains that, I should again be very careful because I'm quoting him, so I don't want to misquote him. Let me explain what I understood, because in that way, I don't know if I'm blame on him if I get it wrong. This buck stops with me. So he says that there is the Divya Dham, which is the Vaikuntha planet, then there is the Mahesh Dham, which is the Sadashiva planet, which is at the border of the spiritual and material world, and then there is the Devi Dham, which is the material world where the demigods reside, with the human beings and others. So in that particular context, he says that when Sadashiva, because he is eternally worshipping Lord Krishna and attracting the fallen jivas and pushing them to Vaikuntha Loka. He's always there. He is a personality that does, he cannot come in contact with material nature because he doesn't want to bear the throne. But because he has to come down to facilitate Krishna's Leela and attack the fallen souls, then he explains as Mahesh. And the Mahesh is the creature that first comes in contact with the material nature. And for the purpose of destruction of the material nature, then he explains as Rudra from the forehead of Lord Brahma. I'll actually type all this up, so it's all right. I'll share with you.
So Adi Shankara, is he a manifestation, or is he was Mahesh incarnation as Adi Shankara?
So the question is Adi Shankara a manifestation or extension of Mahesh? Adi Shankara, my understanding is definitely an extension of Shiva. Which particular Shiva, that I do not.
Okay, so the second question is that you were saying that the Shaivites worship Lord Shiva, but in actuality, the more you deal with Shaivites, the more they negate the existence of God altogether. So that was Adi Shankara's philosophy of Mayapa.
Yeah.
So can you talk about
that? Yeah, so the second point is that I mentioned that Shaivites worship Lord Shiva, but most of them are actually gone because they worship the impersonal form of something, maybe Shivalinga, because of the philosophy of the doctrine that they have taken from Adi Shankara. So, this is a 2000-year plan that Krishna gave us for us to attract us back to Godhead. Because when, and you know this, I know you're asking for my purification. When the killing of the animals was rampant, then we know that Lord Buddha came and stopped that by saying that, by preaching the doctrine of atheism, Sunyavadi, there is nothing. So, there's no Vedas. We decried the existence of the Vedas so that people at least can stop killing the animals. Then Shankaracharya came to say, actually no, Vedas is true, but everybody is God. You are God, I am God, Mayavadi philosophy, everybody is God. So there is, again, as I said, Vedic literature, there is a purpose and there is a progression. So if you see, the first progression is by Lord Buddha to stop animal killing. So therefore Vedas are not going to fight rejecting. So don't kill any animals on the pretext of the Vedas. That's a progression from killing animals to not killing animals. Now when animal killing is reducing, then Lord Krishna sends his second empowerment, which is Shankaracharya, to say, well, no, by the way, Vedas are changing, don't get it wrong. But you are God and I'm also God and everybody is God, oh my God. Which is your drama statement. So it's a, oh my God philosophy, but don't deny the Vedas, but at least have some reverence to God. No? So bring them to God conscious, to a certain level, which is my level, but at least to some level. So that's the first first progression. Then we know that when Ramanujacharya comes, then Advaitacharya comes, Madhvacharya comes. So there is more and more progression. Because by the way, there is not that everything is God. You are God, and there is a God God as well. So now you are a smaller God and there is a bigger God. So another progression. So finally when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, to then he reconciles all this. And this is almost like from Lord Buddha's appearance to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. This is almost like 2500 years. Master plan of Krishna. To say, no, there is Krishna, there is you, and there is a Chaitanya Veda Bhadratta. We are all God in quality, but not in quantity. So to attract us. So coming to your point, in terms of the Shaivites worship, Shiva is an impersonal because they are still stuck with that doctrine that was given by Shankaracharya. But we know that Shankaracharya concluded his teaching by saying that Vajagovinda, Vajagovinda, Murmati, all fools worship Govinda. That conclusion is there. But the followers of Lord Shiva do not want to take his conclusion but go back to the body of his literature. And as I was saying, Vyasadeva also gave us a body of literature which seemingly may seem contradictory. But his conclusion in Bhagavatam is very categorical. That Lord Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead and bhakti is the easiest and simplest and also the sweetest marga, pathway to Krishna. So if those who are stuck, what we speak of worshipping Lord Shiva is an impersonal, but also from the Vedas point of view, those who are stuck at the karma kanda level or worshipping somebody else's supreme personality of Godhead in a personal form, they are still stuck there. But I think if they worship sincerely, and if if we get the prasadam, then the progression will be there. Krishna will take care of them if we preach appropriately and if they have got a single to be preached to.
When we see Prabhupada and Prabhupada's lila and how he dealt with the Mayavadis is quite firm. Prabhupada could do that, and I take your point. Prabhupada could do that, but in the context of our preaching at this point in time, dealing with some of the people, they have that concept of Shiva and personalism. We can't take the same role as Sri Prabhupada and condemn them. We're not in that position.
Yeah.
So I commend you on that point that you made, that we soften the blow by preaching to them. Yes, it's good that you're doing this, but add this to it. And also making more of the philosophical point of saying, yes, you have this understanding that we're all God, but wait, there's more.
Yeah.
There's also the Supreme Person and Lord Chaitanya taught that you can't wait a
day.
So I compliment you on that. So sometimes devotees feel that I can be like Prabhupada and criticize the Shaivite or criticize someone that is impersonalist, and it does no good whatsoever. From the level of consciousness that we're at,
yes,
it does no good whatsoever. It's better to actually accommodate. The classic person for that is the Raduna Maharaj. When you see Raduna Maharaj preaching to all manner of people in all different walks of life, he is a personalist, he has love for that person, and he adds to that person's walk. So,
Prabhupada, he was quite hard with the impersonalists, with the Mayavadis, but we are not Prabhupada, so we don't have the kind of potency to go hard on them. So you know, we soften the blow and preach to them at their level, and then attract them to Krishna consciousness. So when we are preaching, two things that we have to keep in mind is that we give people light and we give them warmth. And generally, in my experience, people are more attracted to the warmth rather than the light. So Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam gives us the torchlight of knowledge. So if we give people only the philosophy, it will be very dry. And as we know, too much of light at one point in time can be blinding. We can blind people and they will run away from Krishna consciousness. But if we balance the light with the warmth, and warmth is the love that Krishna also gave to Arjuna and the battlefield of Kurukshetra. If we just give them love, if we give them friendship, if they go to their house, if we come to the house, and if we don't have much philosophy at the beginning, that attracts people. It's natural. People are looking for love at the end of the day. So if devotees, if we can give them love, they will be attracted to us. And once they are attracted to us in whatever way, attracted to us, by that I mean attracted to our philosophy, attracted to our personality, attracted to our character, attracted to our festivals, attracted to our temples, once that little attraction builds, then we give them little light. Then more attraction builds, we get the middle light. So if we balance the warmth with the light, then you know we are reaching on the right platform. But only warmth will not last forever, because what feels good today will not feel so good tomorrow. So only warmth is a problem and only light is a problem. But if we balance the two, depending on the time, place and circumstance, then we are reaching possibly in the right direction to attract somebody. Yeah? Whoa. Okay, I'm going to take questions, but as I said, Param Vrittavani Vartate, there is Prashadam preaching as well. Maybe one question from other
days. It wasn't really a question.
Okay, yes.
A comment you were making earlier in the class about, the gopis, their problem is that they can't stop thinking of Krishna, and their problem is we can't remember Krishna.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for the point you made right at the end, because it ties back into that about warmth and love, because we're all seeking love, right? But we're here in the material world and we don't know Krishna on a personal level anymore. We've forgotten him. The gopis know Krishna on a personal level, so that's why they can't stop thinking about him, because it's just so connected, they're so connected. Whereas we're so disconnected that we can't remember him. And so what is it that ties us to Krishna is our devotional service, right? And so in the beginning, we may have to do the services that the temple you know, managers give us to do, but it is important for us in the long term to find a devotional service that we can personally connect with, right? That's in our nature to do. And why is that? It's because if we love to do something for Krishna, then automatically we can't stop thinking about the service, and therefore we can't stop thinking about Krishna.
Very good. So the point made here is, you know, like to think, to facilitate the thinking of Krishna throughout the life, if we have an impetus to do a particular type of service, then that service is the connection that will remind us of Krishna. So get attracted to the devotee, attracted to the service, attracted to something that can, you know, become the medium through which we can think of Krishna more and more. Very good point. I have this bare experience and realization only recently. I'll embarrass myself, I'll share this with you. And I'll be very honest. You know, Monday or Tuesday when there was a high storm, it was pretty bad. Tuesday. So I was walking, I work in the city and I live in Albert Park. So I was walking from the city to home, which I do every day, I like my walk. And then I just saw the cloud was darkening, you know, and I knew it's going to perish at any point in time. And I was probably a kilometer and a half away from home. And I thought I could just make it, you know. And then there was a little bit, and I've been in Australia for 20 years in a cold country. Never have I been caught in a high storm outside my house or outside the office or outside the car. And here I am on the footpath, you know, on Pickering Street, walking home, and it's just pelting with ice, and they're big, gold size. And as a background to my fear, when there was a high storm some time ago, you know, my brother's car was parked outside, and it literally created holes, and I've seen that with my own naked eyes, like gold size ice creating holes in the car bonnet. So that's how heavy they are. And I'm here standing on the footpath with a humble umbrella. Now I'll embarrass myself. My first thought, when one or two blocks of ice came, I picked up my phone and called my wife to say, no, can you come and pick me up because I'm here. And then I realized, well, what's the point in her coming? Because she has to get out of the house, get in the car, come here. There is too much of, by that time, I don't know where I am. So I said, I cut the call, I said, don't worry, I manage. Then I thought I'll go to Luba, because Luba, you know, comes within a minute, yeah. So I thought I'll go to Luba. And then after then, I realized, oh my God, this is the Draupadi pastime that I'm going through. When she is in this role, she's calling for Arjuna, Bhima, no, Bhishma, then everybody she's calling. The last person was Krishna. And if I was to leave my body at that point in time, which is possible, because those high storms are huge, they can kill you, there could have been holes in my head. I didn't think of Krishna. And I was so despondent to say, my Lord, you have given me a message to say, where am I positioned? Sitting on the grass and speaking big words, you know, is all good, but there's nothing here. The love for Krishna is not there because I didn't pass the test of time. And then, I should have, and I did. I didn't want to, Krishna, nothing, and I honestly didn't come to mind. So when Radha Govinda Prabhu was in Melbourne a month ago, he made this brilliant statement which just stuck me, you know. He said, there's so much of knowledge that we are getting in Krishna consciousness, and please remember this, he made a brilliant point. There's so much of knowledge that we are getting in Krishna consciousness that is in our head. But Krishna is in the heart. And the distance between the head and the heart is not too much, but it's a lifetime project to get that knowledge here. And sometimes it can be more than one lifetime. To transmit the knowledge from the head to the heart, it's a lifetime, then it doesn't happen. It didn't happen for me. So, Yamin Babi is Varan Baba Prabhupada. So, think of Krishna at the time of death, and I almost failed that. Already I mean that. So, I was on a chance. With that, I stop because it's called the first night. Introduction of Bhagavatam Ki, Prabhupada Ki.